Today is the 19th of October, I guess, and we're in San Rafael at the Phil and Jean Kennedy's home, and we're entertaining some old-time friends from Alaska. And Elizabeth Daly are here. Mr. and Mrs. Tommy Thompson.
Charles.
Everybody called him Tommy up there in the first 3 years.
Tommy up there.
And your name was Florence Roth. And your sister of Dorothy. Roth Loftus. Yeah, well, we all know Dorothy.
Of course.
Now I see. We got the Dalys and we got the Thompsons, and then this lady here. This
is my aunt.
That's your aunt, and her name is Mrs. Hastings. Is she a sister of your mother?
No, she's my mother's brother's widow.
Mother's brother's widow. My God, it's good to see you. Has she ever lived in Alaska?
No. Several of my mother's brothers were Hastings brothers. Two of them were. In fact, one of them, I think, had the number one discovery claim in on the ferry. That was another brother.
Yeah, I was just showing Jean here that I sat down when the Regents put me to work, you know, about the 1st of July. So I sat down and wrote out 20 chapter titles, and so far...
All you have to do now is write the chapter.
Right, that's all I have to do.
Yeah.
I think I've never written a book in my life, but this sounded sensible to me.
Well, I think this is as good a way as any to start, don't you?
Why not?
You have your first line yet?
Well, I've got the first three or four chapters done now.
Have you?
So, yeah, I'm down here on a very interesting part. The politics, of course.
Oh,
now,
yes.
This was your dad was in there, too.
Oh, my father.
You know, your dad
my
made
father
the,
was the...
He was a district attorney.
Bunnell was judge.
That's right.
And he went campaigning for him for delegate.
Yeah. In fact, he made quite a good speech.
He was a very clever talker.
The nominating speech at Skagway, 1914.
Well, you see, I didn't know that. I knew he was all down the coast. But
well, they shared the headlines because more people, I think, knew Roth than knew Bunnell at the time. The papers came out.
Well,
Roth gives a stirring nominating address, and he was declared the candidate. Bunnell was declared the candidate by acclamation or something like that. So it was quite all right.
He didn't get very far against Wickersham.
Well, he didn't do as badly as one might thought. The ratio was about 3-2.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't 2-1 or anything. It was about 3-2. And he was relatively unknown, of course.
I'm going to be interested in your book because you're going to have a lot of old history that I really didn't know about.
I hope to have, and what I'm doing, of course, is researching, right?
Yes.
You see, I get the idea, but I don't think anything should be put in print and permanently unless you've got some verification, you know, hopefully in print.
Yes. Yes.
And we're very lucky.
You must have verification.
We're very lucky. See, we've got all these old newspapers, the Alaska newspapers, going way back.
That's wonderful history.
And I can trace the Juneau papers and the Fairbanks papers, especially at that era, and find the reaction to this nomination, to this, and what the political issues were at the time.
But it's just too bad somebody who was in the Board of Regents in that very early times isn't still alive.
Well, of course.
Of
I've got it.
Side.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah. Bob Bloom is there, you know.
Oh,
sure. I've got him on tape here, and it's something to behold.
Yeah.
Because Bob, you see, still apologizes that he wasn't able to get rid of Bunnell right at the second meeting, you know. Because he tried. You know, they tried to get rid of him.
Were they trying to get Sondgren?
Well, I think that he was who they favored, you see. But, now all I have to do is write him, huh?
Yeah. Well, after having made your
why don't you sit down and chat a while? I'd like to, as we get more acquainted, and what I hope to do with these tapes is to preserve the tapes. I'm not going to erase these that I talk to old timers about. And I've got some good. I want to interview you people on your own right, you know. I brought this along, Art, to show Gene what the topic headings were that I was starting, and so we can have some idea of the scope of what I'm going to undertake. The only reason I decided on 20 chapters, I think I looked and saw how many chapters Charlie Kime wrote on his book and Patty in his book, and I decided maybe that was about right. Tell you, these early chapters are just, they're so intriguing. I could write the whole book on that.
I'm sure.
Those political campaigns in Alaska, I'll tell you, during that era, 1912, 14, 16, 20, and, you know, through, while Wickersham was kicking things around, just fascinating. Because it's, as it's been so often pointed out, you know, as far as Alaska politics was concerned, it was Wickersham and anti-Wickersham. That was, it was for about a span of a decade or so, anyway. You know. So I'm having
interesting to learn how he became to be elected or selected or whatever it was, elected to be president of the college.
Yeah.
I've never heard.
Well, that's right. And the reason he was available was because Wickersham held up his reappointment as judge. You see, so it's all ties together.
Where's Robin?
Yeah, I saw her not so long ago. It looks fine. Working
this
hard.
Second Bill, how was your place? I don't think it was for other people. I wish you would have played Florence, that Chopin. You know, when she played her first Chopin out there, the local radio station put it on a tape.
What was that like?
Sent us a copy.
Oh, wonderful.
Really,
well, I've heard.
Oh, and Dr. Wood wrote me the sweetest letter.
Oh, did he?
He said it was due to the fact that we attended the concert that which Robin played, and I thought she'd be pleased to know how much pleasure she gave everybody. And I thought that was a nice
thing. Well, that was nice of him. Yeah, well, I'm sure. He's not one that would do that unless he meant it, and I think it's,
With this letter, I'm beginning to understand why you're doing such a wonderful job.
Yeah. Well, I'm just.
Well, that one baby Albuquerque.
We're retarded grandsons.
Yes,
we have a horse and a dog.
Well, we only have two, so we feel quite retarded.
Well, we have 13. We think we're great.
Do you have that?
13.
Boy.
13?
Grandchildren.
Really?
Because we have five
families,
you know.
Yes.
I didn't realize
that.
Well, each of the girls have just two, but each of the boys is the only one of those.
Macadamia.
I've had Dr. David and all the others.
One
of
the
two
walking
over here
with
me.
I'm not
good.
He's a
captain.
He's a
captain.
He's a captain. He's a captain.
Isn't one of them now Stanford
Hospital? Wasn't
really.
And
we need to
be on the way.
You
don't come from the
way.
Well, you're
flying in tonight. No, but a dear friend of ours.
And you're from here for 2 days.
Oh, Jamie, yes.
Jamie. I'm going to.
They're coming to meet us. They're in San Francisco tonight, driving this evening.
We wanted to come up here for the night. It's
affairs here. And they're coming to Las Vegas Friday. And
the last celebration. Dorothy and
Arthur
are
going to.
Oh, well, I'm
sure
we're going to love seeing them. I'll be just delighted.
The Sardo Convention, then we'll drive them to Phoenix on Sunday.
And you're going to see Dorothy and Arthur.
Oh, will I ever?
Yes.
Bill,
gosh,
you should go to that
Sardo Convention.
Where is it being held then?
Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Beginning Thursday.
Do you go over, Art?
We're going in.
Are you?
Oh,
have you gone to any of them before at all?
Yes, we've been to a couple of them before. Elizabeth has especially. I haven't been to as many as she has been.
Yeah. Well, I wish I'd have...
Next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, I know I'd have a good time, but I'm kind of anxious to get back and get to work. I'm going to be on the road 10 days on this trip, you see, and
this is the Alaska Yukon, that real old orchestra, the Alaska Yukon Tard Orchestra.
Most of these people have roots back in the gold rush in the 1900 to 1920.
Well, there are very few left, except in direct.
Yeah.
We're among the older group now.
Are you now? Yeah.
And,
so you'll have
but
to
we're
well,
different than most of them. We not only have our roots in Alaska, but we lived in the Klondike for 7 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. When there were still many old timers there. So we're very well rooted on the Canadian side of the picture.
Right, right.
And, we know more of the Canadians than we do of the Americans, I guess.
Well, how many years all told were you up working?
Well, I was in 17 years.
17 years.
Yeah,
now, what mining company was that, Art? No.
Well, I started in Fairbanks at U.S. Melling.
Yeah.
Then Fairbanks Exploration.
Yeah.
Then we went to Dawson in 1935 and lived there for 7 years. And at that time, there were still a great many of the old timers of the Klondike still alive.
Right.
So we got
what year was
well
that? About 1930?
35 to 42.
35 to 42.
We lived in Dawson.
Uh-huh.
And I was.
Was
I
that
was
called Yukon Consolidated? No.
Yeah, I was assistant general manager of Yukon Consolidated.
Yukon Consolidated. Yeah.
So we were very well acquainted in the Klondike.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people that are that anymore that have been to both places and lived there long enough to know a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice connection.
And Elizabeth hasn't been back much to Alaska since she left, or since we left the Klondike in 42, but I've been back a great many times. This is the first time in 8 years that I haven't been in Alaska.
For eight years that I have been back,
and I've been back many times before, in Alaska and the Yukon, both.
Well, I think that's wonderful, and I know you're going to have a good time. I've been in close touch with the university,
whenever I've been in Fairbanks, out there, and, last time I saw the old judge, just when he was starting to fail, so.
Yeah.
Well,
he used to.
Since he's been gone, looking through Patty's time and working.
Sure.
More.
Well, you're certainly familiar in the history of the university, all the old timers, of course, and the mining people, all
many more than I do.
Yeah. Well, you're well known. Of course, I knew her dad when he practiced medicine, and I know. I knew.
We lived there during the boom years, you know. Well, I was in Fairbanks from 26 to 35, and then the gold boom years.
Well, boom in the sense that that's when
gold
the
was. It was depression here, but we didn't feel it there.
Yeah.
We didn't know there was such a thing as depression.
Yeah, I'd like to have another little touch there. Yeah.
We didn't know there was such a thing as depression.
Well, I was. I think you're right. I was in Fairbanks 33 to 37. And it was certainly cushioned, the mines were really catching their stride at the F.E. Company.
Oh, that's what made the F.E. Company was the rising price. Well, what it absolutely astonished me and amazed me and made me practice. Went back there. I was in Fairbanks in 1962.
But she and Mildred were.
Yes, it was. 8 years ago now. And they shut down the last branch.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened that I was in Fairbanks that day, and Elizabeth was christened that day. I was the engineer in charge of construction. She christened it. You know, that was in the older days. That'd be quite an interesting event to have this coincidence. And talked to somebody down at the news miner there. They didn't even know that gold had ever occurred. They didn't know what gold was.
That's right.
They had absolutely no conception of what made that town. They were, well, as Elizabeth's brother said, during those years, and it changed in the last three or four, but for many, since the war up till a few years ago, 80% of the gross income of Alaska came from tax money. And it was a bureaucratic, tax-supported economy, pure and simple. And it just ruined the country. Well, I was the first acting project manager of Naval Petroleum Reserve Number 4 at Point Barrow for Arctic Contracting. Back in 19, well, that was set up the month the war ended. I went north in January 1946 and took over the CDs and
Now I remember
so
now
that
you mentioned
that
it.
Period.
Yeah.
I've been there before. I was there again after.
Yeah.
We've been away for many years.
Yeah.
But I've been back a great many times.
Thanks.
Whenever when Patty was there, I used to go out and see him and say hello at least and throw my hat in, and he was kind enough to invite us out to dinner a few times. And
then
I was there on sundry trips into Alaska.
Can I have a handful?
No. Was he working for the same company? Or no, he was a different company.
No. When Patty left the university, he went to work for a wealthy Canadian by the name of General McCrae.
I remember the name. That's
and
all I know.
It was a perfect setup. Patty had the know-how. McCrae had the money. And Patty, that the economic situation was right. And Patty knew where to go to look for things. Of course, this had started in Canada. But Patty encouraged her, come into Alaska. And it lucked into developing two fine properties for him in Alaska. And several others.
Woodchopper
and I've been to all of them.
Yeah.
Woodchopper and Coal Creek.
And Coal Creek, that's right.
And it was a very happy relationship. The timing was right and everything was right.
Yeah.
Well, then the Second World War came along, and by this time the properties of Alaska were approaching exhaustion, but not exhausted. They lasted till after the war, and Patty, who was one of the few operators, was able to resume operations after the war. Most Alaska miners were not able to do that.
Right.
All over the world.
Right.
This is worldwide, not just Alaska.
No.
And his Canadian ventures weren't quite so successful, but very few of them survived after the war. He started one after the war, which did moderately well. Well, General McCrae got very old, and eventually he died, and things went into an estate. Patty was anxious to get into politics, and through his friends, and he wanted to be governor of Alaska. And just didn't
I wonder
out
about that.
Well, that's
uh-huh.
very true.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a clue to how to run this sort of thing down, if you're interested.
Yeah, I'd like to.
So the opportunity came up for him to become president of the university, and so he was very glad to accept it, and he did a very fine job. He
was
a logical man.
Yeah, 7 years.
If you would like to talk to someone who's really knowledgeable on this background, back to 1900, you talk to Glenn Carroll in Seattle.
Oh, well, I know who he is. I don't know him personally.
Glenn Carrington retired from head of Carrington Company
yeah,
a number
sure.
of years ago.
Yeah.
But he is a walking encyclopedia of information, and since Barney Richmond Sr. died, I think that Glenn probably has the best and most comprehensive knowledge of the factors and the behind-the-scenes things.
Is that right?
Like this
yeah.
item I just mentioned.
Yeah.
I wanted
yeah.
Governor of Alaska.
Yeah.
Glenn was told me.
Yeah.
Very well aware. And he's been intimately connected with the business of Alaska and the politics of Alaska, not actively, but indirect, behind the scenes.
But an astute observer of the...
And he pulled a lot of those strings himself.
Imagine he did.
And he is now retired and only active as a director of the National Bank of Commerce in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But he still lives in Seattle, and he's still in command of his faculties in good shape. And if you could get Glenn to sit down in the district court like you're doing now, for 2 or 3 days, I'll be well worth it.
But it would,
because he can tell you many things, going back to clear back, well, to 1906 about. And the development of Alaska and the interrelationship of business and political.
Yeah.
factors.
Yeah,
as well as people. Jim Dawson, one night at our house, I got, had the great pleasure. Of getting Glenn Carrington, Bonnie Richmond Sr., and an old timer was up there with the Customs Service, who's been these many years now by the name of,
Juno Hiller.
In Dawson.
In Dawson,
oh, Klondike.
Yeah, I see.
And someone else, and they sat down and reminisced for one entire night.
Is that right?
And you know, knowledge of what happened, it's a shame that it wasn't recorded.
Yeah.
Well, because there are these guys, right? It was all names of people, times, places, and what made things go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did this happen? Why that happened? What part Barley played in it as the head of the NC?
Right.
What part Glenn played in it as a behind-the-scenes operator?
Yeah.
Because he was the principal financer of miners in
Alaska. Is that right? He was right in there.
Well, by reason of his business, sale of equipment.
That's right.
He was the principal financer of the miners in Alaska.
He'd have to grubstake them in the sense of giving them equipment on credit. Yeah, sure.
And he had.
So he'd have to know the value of the ground and who were reliable men
and the people.
Yeah, that's right.
And he did. I suggest that this is a phase that you may not be interested in, but if you'd like to know the depths, a lot of information on the interplay of the political, business, economic scene, over the years from approximately, well, let's say beginning around early 1930s, right to date, you can get it from him. Before it's too late.
Now,
because he's the last one. I've known a good man. He's the last one of these people that's still alive that could tell you these.
That had the sense of the big picture. Over.
Who?
Alaska.
Who? From. On behalf of his business, operated behind the scenes.
Yeah.
He knew more about the governors of Alaska than anybody did. He's the one who wanted.
And some of them were characters.
He was into him. He was doing this and doing that. He'd known them, for these many years. And, of course, up until the war, the economy of Alaska was all based on gold. Then it became based on defense, construction, and defense.
Well, now,
and after the war, it became based on total bureaucracy, beginning in 1946, when I went back to, when I went to Point Barrow, was the beginning of it.
It's government, there's no question about it.
Of course, now they got a lot of oil money, and they don't know what to do with it.
Well, we hope so. Did you know Archie Shields by any chance?
No. I know that
Archie, of course, has been... He's interested in Alaska history, you know, and that kind of thing. And he's gathered some material over here. What do you got over there? Photographs, huh? I think they're going to contribute to my plea for help here.
You'll have to get together with her. She has a photograph.
And she can name them all.
And name every single
I know, it's fantastic.
Well, she was sitting in bed on Sunday morning. She went through this stuff. Yeah. Out for you.
Yeah.
And to name every person, every picture in the world.
And I think that's
dozens of pictures. And there'll be one that was 50 years apart. Name them all.
Find a ketchup.
Well, I've worked you long enough.
No, not at all, Art. Believe me, I liked it. Now, the way I look at this thing.
I'll tell you one other person who has a very good knowledge of Alaska background is Arnold Nordale.
This Weissman tells me that too.
Arnold, the last time I saw Arnold in Fairbanks about 3 years ago, Arnold is still very much on the ball.
Yeah.
He shows his age and very white hair and a lot of other things, but he was still all there mentally.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know the background of the Nordale family.
Yeah.
But in terms of relationships of people and things like that, he was never so closely connected to universities.
Mm-hmm.
But he was one time mayor of Fairbanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he might help you.
Yeah. You know,
he lives in Seattle.
You know what my plan was? if the Regents hadn't grabbed me off this summer, I was, my plan for this summer was to start writing a little history of Fairbanks. And I'm still going to do it when I get this done.
That would be interesting.
I'm going to start in, and this is what
get,
this
report. Well, get Elizabeth to tell you about Edith Neal.
Well, a few of the colorful stories, too.
Well, I'm sure you know a lot about them.
But I think that right now, the time is so ripe to get these people while they're still
You know, you're almost too late.
Almost, but I'm
As I tell you, there's only one person I know
sooner.
That's still alive that can do anything for you on a lot of what I was just saying, and that's Glenn Carrington. He's the only one alive.
Yeah, now that Richmond is gone.
Bonnie Richmond and Ed Walker, who was clerk of the court.
That name is familiar.
Well, Ed died about 10 years ago. It's a shame that that wasn't.
No.
My God, he knew more about this thing about trials and so on. He was the court reporter for the great trials of the Klondike and all of Alaska for many years, for a whole lifetime,
Where did he live most of the time?
He lived in Fairbanks. He started out in Dawson.
Yeah.
And he lived in Fairbanks and other places in Alaska, down east and around where the courts were.
Yeah.
And eventually he retired and lived here in Berkeley.
Yeah. Oh, did
he? And he was a very close friend of mine. He used to come down and play peanuts at our house every afternoon for about 5 years before he died.
Yeah. And new stories.
Oh,
by that many.
Photographic memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, those are the grand old men. Hold on.
Tommy, can we talk just while these people are yakking a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah. See, the name Charles O. Thompson is one of the names that I see way back in the early years. When did you enroll at the college?
In the fall of 1926.
Well, you were one of the real old timers, I'll tell you.
Why?
Where did you come from? Were you living in Fairbanks? Or?
No. I had an abortive college career in the U.S. I had hoped to graduate from the University of Montana in journalism, but I ran into something called the post-World War I Depression and ran out of funds, and there weren't enough jobs in Missoula to go around.
Was that your home? Were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Montana.
Yeah.
So I was a dropout for 2 or 3 years, and then I decided to go to Alaska and make a big stake,
make your fortune,
come back and finish college, set the world afire. Well, in June 1925, I took a boat out of Seattle to Seward, and I landed up with a roommate named Charles E. Bunnell.
A roommate, no less. Well,
that was the beginning of
this I think is interesting. Let's have the rest of it.
Well, during the course of this journey, which took several days, I don't know whether you've made it or not.
Yeah, from Seattle to Seward?
Something like 7 or 8 or 10 days, I've forgotten exactly.
Well, it was six anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Good. I just want to be sure this is functioning now. I've heard of Bunnell in lots of situations, but I never knew him as a roommate on a boat.
Well, we became fairly well acquainted after entertaining all of the elderly ladies on the board at teas and whatnot during the way. And he was very much encouraged me to enter at the university, then the college, in the fall of 1925. But I had other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I sort of avoided him on the train from Seward to Fairbanks, although we were on the same train, because I, at the time, wanted to return to the University of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a year in Alaska, I went to Livengood, incidentally. her brother had found a place that pleased him very much.
What was his name?
His name was George.
George Thompson.
He was working in the placer mines at Live and Good, and he'd written me that Live and Good was the place to make a big stake and go back outside. Well, I had a wonderful year there. Dog teams, prospecting, placer mining.
He's on your
gentlemen.
How about you here, Doctor?
No, I'm still fine, I think. Moose hunting and all the rest of it. So at the end of a year, I was in no... I had no interest at all in going back to Montana. So in July 1926, I decided I'd go in and see the judge. Maybe, was he still called the judge?
Oh, yeah. Everyone called him the judge for years and years.
To see if he was still interested in another student. I walked over the trail from Live and Good to Chattanooga. There was no road in there at that time.
There was just—is that right?
There was a trail, 52 miles to a point on what was then a railway running into Chattanooga.
The railroad was still functioning then.
This is in 1926.
Yeah.
And then it was another 4 miles into Chattanooga, which was a little town at that time.
I'm doing fine. I'm just having the best time of my life.
And I walked straight through 56 miles. I stopped once and boiled up some tea. I was in better shape than
boy. Well, that's quite a trek.
Well, anyway, we arrived at college and found the judge, met the judge, and he was quite interested in my enrolling that fall. Sufficiently interested that he introduced me to his acting secretary, his secretary had resigned.
Oh, now this was this would have been Laverne, Mrs. Keyes.
Yeah.
She had married George at that time.
She had resigned, married George. And he was during the summer. He was without a permanent secretary, so he had hired a young lady, and this is she.
No, is that right? Well, things all fit into place, don't they, huh? Now, Florence here, was she a student at the time?
Yes.
Yeah.
She was a student.
And he decided that she could fill in quite all right as secretary to the president.
During the summer.
Just during the summer. And then what summer was that now? 26?
Summer 26.
26, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Later during the summer, he employed a very nice person named Eunice Collins, whom you may or may not have met.
Her name then, I suppose, was McIntosh.
No, I don't think so.
You think she'd married by 26?
I think she was married at that time.
Her name before it was Collins was McIntosh.
Yes, sure.
No relative, I think, of the McIntosh in town.
So far as I know.
No.
She now lives in SoCal.
That's what Jean was saying. Yeah. Oh,
we plan to see her because we have other friends also in SoCal.
She was there when I got there in 1933, of course.
Was she? Oh, yeah. Sure. I didn't know.
Yeah. Now, come on. Now in 26, then, so you decided that with all this attraction, so to speak, you decided to enroll, huh?
Yes. So we enrolled at in the fall of 26. And since my credits at Montana were rather skimpy and not in a field, which was not in a course, which was the curriculum which was available at the university, I did 4 full years.
Oh, you did?
Didn't even bother to transfer.
Essentially started all over.
Yes,
right.
Essentially I started all over.
Well, as I said, I look back, and now you must have been fairly close in, although the Collegian had been published for, I think, one issue in 1923, and a couple of issues in 24 and so forth. When did you take over now? It was still a magazine form when you took over, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. In my freshman year, John McComb was the editor of the Farthest North Collegian, and Leslie Marchand. Have you ever met him?
Oh, I know Leslie. Yeah, took classes from him, in fact.
After I had been there a few weeks or months, asked me if I would also take a position on the Collegian. So I think you'll find that I was listed as assistant editor or something of that sort in my first year, my freshman year. And now what I don't remember is whether I edited it 1 or 2 years, but I think it was 2 years. I think it was the next 2 years.
I think you did.
My
memory failed. But we've got all those, you know,
yes,
on file and on tap. And through the years, I've always looked back, because when I start writing a historical article, I go back to the old Collegians. That was what Bunnell wanted,
of course.
You see, he had a great sense of history, that fellow had. You know, great sense. And he knew exactly what he wanted to have recorded. And he said, let's get this thing out and let's get it down as it happens. And, you know, one of the great sufferings he went through was to see that Collegian discontinued. You know, there is no Collegian anymore. They turned it over. There's a student paper and then there's the alumnus. And that only comes out, 4 times a year, and it covers a little who's going on what. But it isn't a month-to-month record of what the institution is doing and who's doing what in every event.
I was sorry when it was converted into a newspaper, because it seemed to me that something had been lost in the process.
It lost some of its literary value, but it made up for it in the historical little incidental value. You see what I mean? I mean, then you could record the names of the people that was on this committee and did this dance and all this, rather than just feature material.
And it came out, of course, much more.
Well, 12 times the year, rather than before.
And I presume it's still there?
No, the Collegian is folded a long time ago. Oh, yeah. When he finished his term of office and Dr. Moore took over, the students by that time were putting out a paper known as the Polar Star. And they went to him and complained that the Polar Star was trying to put out a paper in the Collegian, was competitive and taking advertising from them, and they'd go ask the merchants for ads and they'd say, well, we're already advertising in one of the papers out there in the Collegian. So he said, fine, then we were not going to compete with a student paper, and discontinued it, essentially. I brought it back I was the only one that insisted, and I prevailed at the time. From about 54 to 56, for about 3 years there, we came back with a non-advertising, just a straight smooth paper, House Journal, edited about 4 times a year. And then it folded completely in 50. Well, I think the last issue carries the story of Dr. Bunnell's death. Mm-hmm. And then that was in 56. So from there on, the history of the university. I won't write, and I've told the regents this. I'll write the history as long as there's material to write about.
Yes.
I'll write it through Bunnell's administration. But I said, you look around. I said, I'd,
I'd be completely at loss to try and write the history since then, because there isn't this nice periodic record of events. You see what I mean? Because in this book that I'm doing, this is factual. This is true.
Is this primarily a biography of Fidel per se?
Yeah.
Is it more a history of the?
It has to be.
University?
I wanted both. You see, really, it's two parts. It's the man and his idea, his college. And so the early part of the book, I would suppose about the first third, maybe 40%, will be biographical, building Bunnell up to assuming the presidency. And then the two are so closely intertwined, you can't separate them for those first 20, for those 1922 to 49.
That's true.
So for the, although the first part will be biographical, the first third, the last two thirds, which is the when the institution started in his presidency, I think that is one and the same. I mean, I can't tell one story without relating it to the other. You see what I mean? So in a sense, it's his biography of Bunnell, and in the other, it's the first 27-year history of the university.
Are you, as a matter of interest, making an effort to analyze the character of the man?
Very much.
His strengths and his very real weaknesses?
I'm trying very hard,
are you aware of any weakness?
No, I am very much aware. But let me put it this way: I'm going to be a friendly biographer. I'm going to write a biography that I think is the big picture, and try and put accentuate the positive.
Yeah,
you see what I mean?
Yes.
And I wanted something that Gene can be proud of, as well as all of us who remember him very favorably. God knows he's had some quirks that every one of us got to goddamn mad at him, if you'll pardon the expression, that we would almost, you know. But as someone told me, well, he said, every man of prominence is entitled to a friendly biographer. And this is what I want. But I do want reactions, because after all, this is part of the, you have to attune yourself to the thing.
Well, I suppose in my case I could be a little bitter about the old boy. I was the man who married the judge's secretary and fell out of favor. But actually, I've never really felt that way about
no. You didn't marry before graduation?
No.
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 Well,
after graduation.
Something in your favor.
Yes. But, I had been lined up on graduation for a job with the Lathrop Interests, and had assumed that I would be in Alaska the rest of my life. You know Cap Lathrop?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, no. Just at that time, Ben Ileson was killed, and the judge persuaded me to give up this job. Well, I never assumed it. And take over the stewardship of a memorial committee to raise funds for a library, I believe.
Memorial building.
Yes, at least.
I think they
building.
Thought it, hoped it would be an aeronautical eventually.
Yes. Well, then I had the misfortune to marry the boss's daughter, secretary, which displeased him very much. Although even that was tragic in a common sort of way. I went to him and told him that we were getting married, and that the date was so and so, and persuaded him to come along. He wasn't the pater familias of the family. He wasn't giving the bride away. Maybe that would have been easy. But anyway, later that same day, and this was almost immediately preceding our marriage, said some things to Florence, who has a temper of her own. As a result of that, he didn't come to the wedding. I didn't know about this until I was standing looking around, and the judge he didn't quite get over that. Shortly after that, by mutual consent of all concerned, by this committee was disbanded. And I went back to Captain Lathrop and told him I was unavailable, and he told me that subsequently the judge had withdrawn his support. So I ended up going to Washington
starting another career.
Starting quite different life. I've never held this.
No.
As it turned out, he did me a very great favor. I couldn't have had a more interesting life than I had.
Well, and truly, but you know, he had that propensity for all of a sudden doing something like that to people that would completely be unexpected, you know.
Yeah.
But I think anyone that knew him well, sometime or other, some incident like that would come up where he'd slap them down or do something that would just drive them, you know.
Laverne Keyes, of course. Once he was going to marry his janitor, he just hit the roof.
I'll bet he did.
But later on, came back, and, you know, they got over this, and she filled in a time or two.
Tommy, for the record,